Welcome to the Poem of the Week. As you know, poems are patient-oriented evidence that matters. Each week, our poem is intended to help you practice the best, most current medicine by alerting you to studies that could change your practice. As usual, our host this week is National Public Radio's Dr. Michael Wilkes, and he is joined by InfoPoem's senior editor, Dr. Mark Abel. Gentlemen.
Hello, Mark.
Hi. How you doing, Mike?
This week, we're going to do a poem that is one in a series of Canadian prediction rules. And I don't keep track of all of these, but there certainly are the Ottawa ankle rules, the knee rules, bacterial meningitis, community-acquired pneumonia, neck fractures, appendicitis. There's a whole bunch of science behind helping doctors to predict when something either is present, a disease, or whether a study needs to be done, for example, an x-ray of the neck or the like. Frankly, I find these extremely useful. Again, I can always override the rule, but they're a good guide for me in terms of my thinking, and I use them heavily with patients. This poem this week asks a question in this prediction arena, which is, can a combination of clinical findings rule in or rule out coronary artery disease in patients with chest pain presenting to their primary care doctors? Clearly, if there is such a rule, and if it was accurate, it would be enormously beneficial, not only to us and our patients, but to whoever's footing the bill. Mark, this was published in the Canadian Medical Association Journal. What did they find?
Yeah, this was a nice study, and it's nice to see people studying what we care about in primary care in the primary care setting. This was a group of German researchers also, and Germans have not done a ton of primary care research, so it's good to see this work going on there. They identified about 1,200 patients who presented to their primary care doctor, one of 74, with non-traumatic chest pain. And the doctors all took a standardized history and physical exam. If they wanted to or if they thought it was warranted, they ordered chest x-ray or EKG or echo or ordered referral or whatever they needed to get. The patients were contacted 6 weeks and 6 months later to find out how they were doing. Were they still alive? Were they still having chest pain? That kind of thing, what their diagnosis was. And then a panel reviewed all of the clinical and imaging and cardiovascular data at the end of 6 months to come up with a final diagnosis. Now, a big limitation of this study is verification bias. An ideal study would take every one of those 1,200 patients and give them a stress thallium, for example. That wasn't possible in this study. The researchers argue that if they really did have significant coronary disease, presenting to a doctor with chest pain, that it would have been diagnosed within a six-month period. And I think that's probably correct. The failure to do that probably is why this is in CMAJ rather than in the New England Journal, but I still think it's a strong study, and there are a lot of other strengths that make up for that one issue. So they took this information, they developed a clinical decision rule, which had just five items, and they gave just 1 point to each item. Basically, if you were a woman over 65 or a guy over 55, you got a point. If pain was worse during exercise, you got a point. If the pain couldn't be reproduced by palpating the chest, you got a point. If the patient assumed that their pain was of cardiac origin, that was also worth a point. And finally, if the patient had known coronary or cerebrovascular disease. So then they didn't stop there. They then went to Switzerland, which I would like to do too, but they went to Switzerland. It's a little closer for them. And they found a data set of 672 Swiss patients, again, primary care patients, very similar study design. They'd gathered data very much in the same way, and they used these data to validate the rule, and it worked. So basically, if someone had zero or one clinical factors, only 0.5%, only 3 out of 540, had coronary disease. So zero or one factors, very low risk. On the other hand, if they had four or five of these factors, 63% had heart disease. So that's a group you'd want to send right to the ER or get, you know, into the hospital right away to manage that chest pain. The in-between group with two or three factors, 12% had heart disease. That might be a group where you would obviously get an EKG. You might get a stat troponin, but if the EKG was normal or near normal and the troponin was negative, then that's a very good prognostic indicator, would let you work those folks up at home, versus if any of those were abnormal, you'd probably want to admit those folks too. So bottom line is that a real simple clinical rule with five items was very well validated, not only a different setting, but even a different country, and was able to identify very low and very high-risk patients with chest pain.
It's impressive, you know, as you're saying that this verification bias was an enormous omission, and I can only imagine that the reason they didn't do that had to do with cost. I wonder how much of what these researchers found in this prediction rule was what we would do ordinarily anyways. I mean, we don't necessarily assign the same point values, but as you were going through the different criteria in terms of gender and age and, you know, pain with exercise, not reproducible by palpation, I sort of was thinking to myself that that's how I stratify patients anyways into low, medium, and high risk. And sure, they put some numbers around that, but is this really going to be a practice changer?
Everything's better with numbers, Mike. You should know that by
okay.
now. Come on.
Okay.
Come on, admit it.
Okay.
Don't you feel better with numbers?
Okay.
Come on.
Okay.
No, I mean, it's a good point. And I think it would have been really interesting, and I actually think they might have gathered these data and will be publishing it separately, was the impression I got of comparing the clinician's initial diagnosis with what turned out to be the case. But, you know, these are what I like to say is these are decision support tools. They're not decision replacement tools. So they're going to be compelling factors that even in somebody with only one of these positive would make you say, you know what, I'm going to admit this person, I'm worried. And, that, you know, this is a way to verify, support, back up your decision. It's not certainly not the only thing you need. And I think it is good to learn what's really important. We don't have infinite time to ask 400 questions, so you know, we certainly would want to make sure we're asking these five questions. And it's also a great teaching tool because it helps, you know, learners understand, you know, where they should be focusing. So I think there's a lot to gain from tools like this. And remember, Mike, everything is better with a number.
Okay, I will try to keep that in mind. We'll talk with you again next week, Mark. Thanks.
All right, see you then.
That's this week's poem. Thanks for listening. If you'd like to look at this and other recent poems, please go to www.infopoems.com. Please join us again next week for another medical poem.